Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back, folks. Dr. Jeffrey A. Singer, Senior Fellow at the Cato Institute in the Department of Health Policy Studies, joins us. He authored a piece called This New Year, Resolve to Abandon Zero COVID Mentality. Dr. Singer, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Doc, I've asked this question of many public health experts over the past several weeks. What is the matrix, and who decides when we move from a pandemic to an endemic? And I've yet to get an answer from anyone.
The World Health Organization apparently officially declares these infections pandemics. But I read an interesting article in the BMJ, it used to be called the British Medical Journal, about 2 weeks ago that was very insightful. It said, the end of the pandemic will not be televised. And it pointed out that understandably, government leaders tend to err overly on the side of precaution. But as more and more people start to realize that this is no longer a major threat to them, and that the trade-offs that they're being asked to make are not acceptable, they're just on their own going to gradually accept that the threat has receded and that they need to resume life. And it's just going to happen. So slowly, gradually, the public is just going to decide that regardless of what the government says, the pandemic is over for them. And I think there's a lot of sense to what they said in that article.
And it's one of the reasons I brought you on today was as I read the piece that you authored, and I'll just read the first paragraph. It says, as we begin the third year of the pandemic, the U.S. average is over 200,000 new cases a day. More than 800,000 lives have been lost due to the virus. This has occurred despite travel bans, mask mandates, total or partial lockdowns, and school closures. And as, you know, these variants have come and gone, and each one of them has been unique in and unto itself, but what we're learning is that a lot of what we did in the past may not have actually helped much, and we keep going back to the same remediation techniques. And I'm wondering, you know, in our fragmented approach of the state's control, is this a good practice? And when do we get out of this? And not to be repetitive, but I mean, you know, it just kind of confounds me.
Well, on one hand, we're kind of fortunate that we have a federal system because different states took different approaches. But unfortunately, at least on a national level, the guidelines and recommendations have not changed very much. Now, in the very beginning, you know, in the early 2020, when we didn't know much about this virus and what to expect, you know, it was totally excusable and understandable that we should prepare for the worst. But now it's 2 years later, and we know a lot more. And also, the virus has gone through natural selection like they always do. And the tendency is for viruses to become more contagious but less deadly, less lethal over time because this virus is not going to go away. And unfortunately, the policies that were put in place and the philosophy that seems to be governing policymakers even till today has been based on the notion that they can get it, that if we do the right thing, we can get this virus to go away. But there's an animal reservoir that the virus inhabits animals. It's going to have its ups and downs in terms of outbreaks, but it's not going away. And we've only been able to eradicate historically one virus in human history. That took a couple of hundred years. That was smallpox. So we should take stock in the fact that the most recent variant, Omicron, it looks like that this is highly contagious, the most contagious variant so far. So it's out-competing the other variants, and soon it will replace all of them. But it's, for the overwhelming majority of people, it's a mild to moderate cold. Well, we've all had colds before. It appears that if you're vaccinated, and especially if you're boosted, then you're even more assured that if you get infected, which you still are likely to get infected because it's that contagious, it's going to be more likely to be mild in your case because you've been vaccinated. But even people who haven't been vaccinated, while they're at greater risk of becoming sick enough to go into hospital and maybe even die, they're still more likely to get a cold. This is a very mild form of the virus. In the beginning, people were skeptical of that, but we're seeing every country that's had the Omicron wave is noticing the same things. First in South Africa, it was reported, but now it's peaked already and is coming down in the UK, in other European countries, and we're seeing the same thing, that it spreads like wildfire within a very short period of time. No matter who you are, you're not safe, vaccinated or not. But the overwhelming majority of people have a cold, and the hospitalization rates and the fatality rates are dramatically lower than with the previous variants. So I think because of this, and because we know that this virus isn't going to go away, it's time to adopt a new approach. Now, to the earlier point you made, we have a federal system, so we were able to witness an experiment. We had some states that were more drastic than others in terms of restrictions and lockdowns, and at the end of the day, it didn't really seem to matter. So that should tell us that the restrictions and lockdowns were ineffective, but they did cause harm. You know, there's the other side. There's a trade-off involved. So kids, we all know by now, kids in many places have lost 2 years of school. This has had not just educational consequences, but cognitive and social developmental consequences. We're seeing mental health problems on the rise. And this is not to mention the mental health and substance use problems with adults and the economic damage that's been done that's going to take years to recoup. So what I argue is that we should adopt an approach with Omicron that basically is an approach that accepts the fact that it's going to be here. Let's focus on protecting the people who are most vulnerable to having a bad outcome from the virus, and they need to protect themselves as well. They need to take responsibility. And otherwise, just use common sense, have the general public who's not vulnerable, you practice common sense precautions and go back to living. I mean, pre-COVID, when there'd be a flu going around or a nasty cold going around, you know, it was common sense would tell us if you think you're getting a cold, then maybe you shouldn't go visit your elderly grandmother who might, you know, she could die from that cold. So you would stay away. And if you were with someone who appeared to have a cold, you'd keep your distance and, you know, not shake their hand because they could have coughed in their hand and they could spread it to you. So we should go back to behaving like that again. But if we're going to continue to lock down or restrict things based upon this highly contagious, essentially cold virus that's going around, we're never going to get out of this, and the damage is going to mount over time.
When we develop strategies, obviously we know now after 2 years that there's a certain percentage of this population that's vaccine hesitant. And I'm not sure that there's going to be a messaging by anyone with any credibility that's really going to move that number significantly. And I'm curious as to why the public health system, although you don't want to make this announcement, but you start focusing on therapeutics, because it seems to me that therapeutics, you might be able to make inroads with that vaccine hesitant population with therapeutics. And therefore, if we stay true to the original mission, so as to not overwhelm the healthcare delivery system in this country, it would seem to me we would be in a better place. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I think we were right to get a vaccine out, and there's no question a vaccine is effective in preventing you from getting seriously ill. But we did that, unfortunately, at the expense of putting enough emphasis on therapeutics, because I think, again, it was the I think there was this false idea that if we got everybody vaccinated, the virus will go away. It's not going to go away. So you need to be ready for when it comes back. And that's where therapeutics come in. And so we should have put more emphasis on it. Also, while I highly recommend getting vaccinated, the fact that the Omicron is so contagious that it'll even infect vaccinated people, I kind of, to me, that puts an end to the communitarian argument, you know, that if you don't get vaccinated for yourself, at least get vaccinated to protect your fellow community members, because it doesn't protect your fellow community members. The only argument to get vaccinated at this point is to protect yourself, and I think it's a good argument. I got vaccinated and I got boosted.
Sure.
But if another person chooses not to, you know, then if they have a bad outcome as a result of that, that's on them. It's not a threat to me if they chose to didn't take the choice that I did to protect themselves. Now, as far as therapeutics are concerned, what I find frustrating also is there's been almost a tendency to ignore some therapeutics that are out there. For example, now I'm at this point, I've looked at all the data on hydroxychloroquine, and have been randomized controlled trials on that, and there's no evidence that that is helpful against COVID. And the jury is still out regarding ivermectin. Most of the studies have been limited studies, but there's a good randomized controlled trial underway now. So I'm going to reserve judgment on that. But there is a drug, fluvoxamine. It's also called Luvox. It's been around since the early 90s. It's an antidepressant drug, SSRI category. And that has been shown in large randomized controlled trials. This isn't even controversial among healthcare professionals. That's been shown to be about 91% effective in preventing hospitalization, preventing death from and serious illness in COVID patients. So it seems to be even more effective than the new Pfizer drug Paxlovid that came out. And in fact, it's on the Johns Hopkins University list of therapeutics to be considered by healthcare practitioners. In the province of Ontario, it's on the list to be considered. And if you mention this to anyone in the public health establishment, they're not going to, you know, smirk and dismiss you because they're aware of this data. What I am concerned about is why aren't we not hearing this mentioned more? Because
it's cheap.
You know, we're already having. It could be. I don't want to get into the psychology.
I didn't think you would go there, but I'll say it because there's not a lot of money to be made on this drug, quite frankly.
Right. Well, it costs $10 for a course of the Luvox, and the side effect, by the way, is that it relieves depression. So the thing is, here we are.
Sign me up, Doc.
And here we are wondering how quickly can Merck and Pfizer get those antivirals manufactured, because it takes a while to get it manufactured and then get it into the pharmacies. Well, right now they have fluvoxamine in the pharmacies. So I don't know why. Prescribers are aware of this, but I think the media and public health officials ought to be talking about this more, because you could use this right now, and this is an improved therapeutic, and it's FDA approved since 1994, I believe.
Yeah. Doc, I want to go back to one point that you said before, because in my recent readings, I'm hearing it more and more. The fact that COVID lies in the animal kingdom as to why eradication of this is literally almost statistically impossible.
Yeah, because we have a lot of reports now that deer seem to be getting infected with COVID-19. Some house pets, some cats, zoo animals, some farm animals have gotten infected with COVID-19. So this means that even if we see it go away for a while among humans, it's being passed between different animals, and eventually it's going to jump from the animal back to the human again. And back and forth and back and forth. So
because in the animal kingdom, there is no eradication effort, right? There's no, you know, things taking place. We're not giving them vaccines, right, and we're not doing any of the other stuff.
Yeah, we have no handle on which animals and how many and where they are. So that's why that it's really a fool's errand to think that you can, if you just stay hunkered down long enough, this thing will go away. No, that's why every place that's tried. For example, Australia had these draconian lockdowns, and parts of Western Australia still do, and they as they've relaxed, look what's happened. Their cases are skyrocketing there. Fortunately, it's mostly the Omicron variant, so you know, it's not as filling up the hospitals as much, and it's not as deadly. But still, you can't escape it. And now New Zealand is still trying to be like a little hermit nation, not letting people in or out. So, and of course, they're isolated and pretty far from the rest of the world. But one of these days, they're going to have to open up and let people in and out. And that, and they got a date with COVID. There's just no way to escape it. And when you think, when that happens, you know, New Zealand is going to have to think, you mean for the last 3 years, we were basically under solitary confinement and it did nothing? Yes, that's what's going to happen.
Right. What should we be, what data should we focus on right now? What is the most important data to our, you know, our listening audience? If they're going to look at something, what should it be?
Yeah, I think it should be hospital numbers. And I'm not alone in this. Dr. Ashish Jha, who is the dean of Brown University's School of Public Health, he's recently spoken and written this as well. And more are starting to say that, because case numbers just reflect how many people have gotten symptomatic and went and got tested. And by the way, there are a whole lot of people who haven't gotten tested. So the case numbers are actually underestimating how many people have COVID. But since case numbers are just number reported cases, that's not telling us the effect of it. And if the hospitals are not filling up with sick patients from COVID, and if people aren't dying from COVID, that's the most important thing from a practical standpoint for us to know, and for the public to know in general, and as to how to react to this.
So we've really come full circle then, because early onset 2 years ago, it was all about keeping the numbers below the curve relative to the healthcare delivery system. And then we moved off base and we were trying to do all kinds of different things. And now it seems like we're right back to hospitalization numbers. And I think had we been there all along, we would have been much better served.
Yeah. And you know, it's 2020 hindsight is always, you know, it's not fair, but we know more now. And so, there's no excuse to continue.
But there was some scientific relevance to that statement, right? I mean, it was supported by science when they made that statement.
What
the first
we knew
time.
At the time, yes,
yeah,
yeah, and I supported it because the thought was that even then, whether you could eradicate COVID or just live with COVID, the goal here at that time was to prevent the healthcare system from getting so overwhelmed that it couldn't handle the cases from COVID or anybody else who needed hospitalization. So that made sense, and it still makes sense. But I think even there we've learned. So, for example, in many states, governors put a moratorium across the whole state on non-emergency procedures, elective procedures, as it's called. And the governor of my state did the same thing. And in previous years when we had pandemics and we've had a lot of bad flu seasons, that was never done. The hospitals themselves, working with their medical staff and their medical community, they worked out their own solutions in real time, and they were able to adjust with more flexibility. So in the case of my state, we had a 40% occupancy rate in April, in May of 2020, and staff were being laid off. And then the governor lifted the moratorium. In my state of Arizona, where I live in practice, we got hit with COVID around late June, early July, and it was a real big surge. And the governor this time didn't do that and let the hospitals work it out on their own. And different hospitals made different arrangements and also were able to relax the restrictions on elective procedures at different times based upon what was going on in their hospital. And they moved people around to different hospitals in their system. And in certain parts of the state where the hospitals weren't that crowded, then they didn't have to do any restrictions on elective procedures. So it's much better to allow, when you're going to have to make these restrictions and adjustments, it's much better for it to be done on the most local level by the people directly involved in it, rather than a top-down, one-size-fits-all approach that is sort of a blanket approach that affects the whole state. Because then if you have to make an adjustment, it's like turning around a battleship, whereas, you know, here adjustments are taking place on a local level in different parts of the state based upon changing circumstances.
Real quick, I only have a minute, but I have been very proud of healthcare officials. I mean, fierce competitors in the everyday world, but really hospitals coming together, recognizing and realizing the challenge before them, and collaborating on levels that I've never seen. I served on a hospital board for over 20 years, and I've been very proud of their approach. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, these are professionals. They want to do the right thing, and they are generally very effective in working with the medical staff and the community. I've been very happy with them. The only thing that concerns me is when they get kind of orders from above that are unrealistic and don't take into account, you know, what they know on the ground.
Weaving some of this stuff in operationally, I know, is a difficult challenge at best.
Yeah.
Dr. Jeffrey Singer with the Cato Institute, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate your time and your insight. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. You too.
All righty. That's Dr. Jeffrey Singer, senior fellow at the Cato Institute. He works in the Department of Health Policy Studies. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You know, we were talking about the policy and this new year resolve to abandon zero COVID mentality, that we're not going to actually ever eradicate it. And we still have folks out there that believe that they can. But when you look at some of these policies around the country, you can't help but shake your head and wonder, who are these people that come up with this stuff? You're going to love this. So Boston Public Schools mandate that windows in their classrooms be kept open 4 inches to mitigate the spread of COVID. Now, I don't have to remind you, it's freaking cold in Boston, right? So the school has sent a note to the parents reminding them of the policy and suggest the following. It is still very cold. Remember, the windows in our classrooms have to be open. I suggest layering your child's clothes, 2 pairs of pants, 2 shirts, a sweater, wear 2 pairs of socks, plus all of their typical outer wear, hat, gloves, scarves. So imagine, if you will, that your four-year-old is sitting in the classroom, and one side of the classroom is nothing but windows. The policy says that all of the windows need to be open 4 inches. It's 15 degrees outside, which means the ambient temperature inside is what? You know, probably somewhere around 20 to 25, depending on which way the wind's blowing. Does anybody in this listening audience believe that these kids are learning anything? They're freezing their tails off. And this is the real irony. There's a school bus driver shortage in Boston, right? So there's no social distancing in the bus, although there is in the classroom, with the open windows, with the freezing, sub-freezing air coming in. And they closed the windows. Yeah, you heard me. I mean, who is leading these institutions? And we wonder why we're going to have the mental health issues that we're facing because we are torturing people right now. I mean, this is absolutely real. When I read this article, I was like, you have got to be kidding me. Temperatures in school buildings have been adjusted to 76 degrees. The reality is their heating systems can't keep up. Not when, you know, a certain percentage of the building has all open windows, because every window has to be open 4 inches. Not a window, every window 4 inches. And therefore, the temperatures inside, they can't keep up. Now, most of these same folks are going home, right? And I got to imagine there's nobody at home opening their windows 4 inches. And they drive around in a car with other kids in their class. They're involved in activities. They're going to restaurants here, that. And nobody is driving around with their windows open at 4 inches. Would love to hear from you. 504-260-1870 on No Filter Friday. This is absolutely crazy. And you just read these policies over and over and over again. And that's what struck me about Dr. Jeffrey Singer. And I've heard and read a lot of stuff that he's actually, you know, put out there. I was glad that we were able to get him on. I mean, because at some point in time, we need to figure out who's going to make this call, how the call is going to be made, and who sends this message out. Because as he appropriately points out, most political leaders are risk averse. They're not going to be the one to step out there and say these things and move from where we are to where we ultimately need to be. And has synthesized all of the materials out there in order to deal with these issues and to make learned decisions. One of the things that he points out here, and it's kind of interesting to me as well, is that he says, and I quote, "It is also important to be honest about the fact that the jury is still out on the benefits of mask wearing. Now, however, there is close to unanimous agreement on the ineffectiveness of cloth masks. George Washington University public health professor Leanna Nguyen calls them little more than facial decorations. Unless you're wearing the KN95 or the N95 mask, these cloth masks are little of no use." And, you know, but we're not really talking about these things. And is there some risk mitigation? I guess maybe there is, but they seem to be talking in more absolute terms that there is no benefit there. So it's going to be interesting to see just how fast in 2022 we move from point A in that balance of saving lives and livelihoods. As some of that data gets scrubbed, typically it's about 2 years after occurrence that you begin to get relevant data on, you know, who died as a result of COVID, who died with COVID, how many hospitalizations were as a result of COVID, hospitalizations with COVID. Would be very valuable information. We'll be right back, folks. Stay with us. This is Newell on No Filter Friday. We'll be right back.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We've heard a lot about this voting rights legislation that's being proposed in Congress. Well, Arizona college students have really taken this serious. In fact, they're threatening to go on a second hunger strike if Congress doesn't pass the Democrat-led voting legislation by Monday, January 17th. Lila Winbury, a junior at Arizona State University, says, "We're prepared to hold out indefinitely now that the holidays are over. I have seen the consequences of a broken democracy my entire life, so we're willing to suffer the consequences of hunger striking rather than the consequences of the bill not passing." Now, she says that they're going to hold out indefinitely, but it's advertised as a 15-day hunger strike, so we'll see. She believes that there will be a nationwide hunger striking, more than likely. Doubt that. And this group aims to take money out of politics, establish more lenient voting rules, and make Election Day a federal holiday. Looks like these kids are going to be hungry come January 17th, because the president has already announced that if you don't first succeed, you try again. You get it right the second time when it deals with civil rights. At the University of Washington, it's amazing to me how the diversity of thought is really just kind of going to the wayside. And, you know, diversity reveals itself in many shapes and forms, and unless one finds themselves on a university campus, especially in the state of Washington. The diversity of thought continues to be attacked, so much so that universities have adopted, like, company lines. So the university now has a company line that you have to adhere to. Consider the following. If professors at the University of Washington want to include a statement of land acknowledgement on their syllabi, they must provide the administration of the university's viewpoint on that, or simply just shut up. It has become increasingly common, according to the article, in academia to promote statements that formally recognize indigenous ties to the land occupied by a university. So the University of Washington Paul Allen School of Computer Science and Engineering encourages professors to include a land acknowledgement on their syllabi at the expense of, obviously, their First Amendment rights, right? So they have a canned land acknowledgement statement that you must have. So one of the professors decided that this acknowledgement statement to the faculty, that he included his own, a modified statement that he put in his syllabus. And it said, "I acknowledge that by the labor theory of property, the Coast Salish people can claim historical ownership of almost none of the land currently occupied by the University of Washington." Regis's statement was a nod to Locke's philosophical theory that property rights are established by actually improving, tilling, supporting the land. Obviously, the oppressed were not very appreciative of same, but as it points out, they went back and did a history of the land that the University of Washington sits on, and it turns out that it was sold. The bounds describe a huge area of land in western Washington, bounded by the Cascades to the east, Canada to the north, Puget Sound to the west, and an arbitrary line well south of Seattle. This land was paid for in Article 6 in consideration of the above cession. The United States agreed to pay the tribes and the bands the sum of $150,000 in 1855. Interesting, and of course seldom or never mentioned, they said in the article, that what is remarkable is that the 11th article states, "The said tribes and bands agree to free all slaves now held by them and not to purchase or acquire others hereafter." And all of this was done 10 years prior to the 13th Amendment that abolished slavery in this country. None of that historical significant issue or details are provided for in the land acknowledgement statement provided by the University of Washington. Why? Because that doesn't align with the ideology of the oppressed and the oppressor. We have to have some oppressor guilt, no matter what it deals with at some point in time. Or otherwise, you know, you're considered privileged. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We are back in Scoot's Up Next. And what do we have coming up, Scoot?
Well, you know, it's a beautiful Friday, Newell. It's Free for All Friday. I don't want to be serious, but I just don't know how we can ignore the problem of, over a 14-hour period yesterday, seven drivers held up at gunpoint. And I mean, these carjackings. You know, you were a sheriff. You were in law enforcement. I mean, you've got to see that things have really changed dramatically, and it's raining terror through the city. And so, you know, once again, I'm going to appeal to Mayor Cantrell to say something, anything, just start to address this issue, even though the crime's not her fault. So I would rather not do this, but I just don't know how we avoid it, at least for the beginning of the show.
When you think about, you know, the fact that somebody's going to get hurt. I quoted a Philadelphia article, two kids shot by the victims of carjacking now. So we just got shootouts at the OK Corral in the streets of Philadelphia. We continue to have a zero bail policy there. Folks are getting in, getting out, committing crimes when they get out, no accountability and no answers. It's interesting.
Well, that's right, and it seems like it's all about politics. It's like politicians don't want to address the issue because it's complicated, and they don't want to offend the voters that put them in office, which once again just reminds us all that being a politician is not about caring about people. It's not about doing the right thing for people. It's about handling those topics that will get you elected or reelected.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if you care so much about the safety of the citizens of New Orleans when it comes to COVID, then what about these freaking thug punks that are out there carjacking cars? I mean, this is just not acceptable. And it's everywhere.
The more we talk about it, maybe we'll get somebody's attention. I'm not retreating. I'm full steam ahead on this issue.
Because good for you. I'm with you.
We've got to affect change, yeah. And I know you're with me.
I'm with you.
And this article that our opinion piece that I talked about today, fighting crime is a tough job, and this person says, and apparently in this city, nobody wants to do it.
Right.
So it'll be interesting. Have a great free-for-all Friday. Scoot's up next, folks. Stay tuned. We'll see you again next week.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.